The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by One-Click Upsell by Zipify Apps. You probably know there's three ways to make more money from your store. You can get more traffic, you can increase the size of the orders you get, or you can increase the number of people that convert on your site. You're probably spending time on traffic, almost certainly. You may have spent time with conversion rate optimization, but when's the last time, honestly, you tried to increase that cart size? Well, One-Click Upsell makes it incredibly easy to offer powerful targeted upsells to your customers. They've generated over $150 million in additional revenue for store owners, just like you. And over 16% of people who get offered an upsell actually take you up on it. It's really powerful. Their entire system is built into Shopify's native checkout, so it's rock solid and secure. And it's built by Ezra Firestone and his team. Ezra, you may know, good friend of mine. He's been in the e-commerce game for a long time. He uses this on his own eight-figure stores. He's in the trenches and he knows it works. So if you want to actually start working on a third of your business that you've been neglecting, increasing that cart size, check them out today at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey guys, it's Andrew here and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven-figure plus e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, going to be diving into the somewhat painful results and takeaways from a CRO slash UX audit that Conversion Crimes did on our ecommercefuel.com website recently. It's run by a super sharp woman named Quim Zeta, and they dove in and took a look at our site because what happened was we redesigned it about 9 months ago with more of a holistic message in mind for e-commerce fuel. We wanted to focus on not just the community, the private community that we have, but also on the capital side, the ECF capital side, and on the podcast and all this kind of stuff. And we realized that it wasn't performing nearly as well as we had hoped. And so we brought in Quinn and her team. And after diving in and doing a bunch of work, they came back with some fairly embarrassing takeaways that in retrospect, like everything is obvious, but weren't at the time. So we're going to dive into those. We're going to talk about those. We also talk about user testing, how you need to think about user testing. Do you need to go out and get loads of users to walk through your website? What's the number you need to actually have a good sense of what's going on? We talk about how to think about designers and hiring people and just, kind of some of the common mistakes people make with their websites from a CRO and a UX and a conversion standpoint. So hope you enjoy it. Hope you enjoy laughing at me and our horrible mistakes, boneheaded moves. And let's dive into it. Quinn, we're going to get into conversion and CRO and all this, fun, geeky optimization stuff. But I got to lead with, man, what's it like living in Playa del Carmen? That's got to be a pretty sweet gig.
Yeah, Playa del Carmen's awesome. One, Mexico's great. The weather's great here year round. And for the digital nomads out there, I call it the Caribbean Chiang Mai.
Yeah. How do you end up there? Have you been there for a while? What made you pick that place?
I've been traveling out of like two suitcases for about 10 years, and I've been a lot of places. I've been in and out of Playa del Carmen for the last couple of years, anything staying here from a couple weeks to like 6 months. And when the pandemic happened, I just happened to be here, and I was like, well, I kind of wanted to settle down somewhere anyway, kind of missing the routine of being in one place. And so, yeah, I've ended up here and it's great. It's becoming my home and can't ask for anything better.
That's cool. How's the COVID situation in Mexico right now? Do they have it pretty under control? Is it kind of crazy? What's the read there?
Well, by nature in Playa del Carmen, it's hot, it's outdoors. All the restaurants are generally outdoor seating anyways. So there wasn't really a lot of things that needed to change there. But to go to any of the stores or really in anything, you get your temperature checked. They only allow a certain number of people. They've got some really good rules and regulations there. And the hospitals have never really been over capacity here at all. So maybe it's just not spreading that much here, but we definitely have cases.
Well, cool. Sounds like a good place to set up shop. And I got to thank you too. I mentioned this before we started recording, but you've been in ECF for, I don't know, maybe 6-9 months now, and just contributed like an insane amount of value as our CRO expert, as just dropping value in the threads. We're going to get into the analysis and the CRO and the testing you did for e-commerce fuel that's leading to a redesign that we're doing. So just a huge thank you for that. You've been phenomenal in the community. And I, like you mentioned too, that we at e-commerce, we rarely admit vendors like agencies. It's a community focused on store owners. But you came in with a recommendation of someone else. And I believe, and that's how we really, the only way we admit vendors now. And you did just such an incredible job of coming in and not pitching your stuff, but building credibility through just offering value and trust. And you did an AMA in the form. Can you talk a little bit about your methodology? Because you were saying that like 80% of your customers now have come from ECF, and the way that you long balled this just is super impressive to me.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for that. I think it's just part of it is I just feel weird like pitching my own stuff too, especially when I don't know people. And so my kind of philosophy is go in, like give massive value, talk to people, answer their questions, share my expertise, no matter whether it's on the topic of CRO or not, like really anything where I can add value. And by doing that, people build trust with you and rapport, and they're interested in you. They're like, oh, well, what does she do? Let's go check out Conversion Crime. Let's see what that's about. Oh, I might be able to use that. And then they kind of reach out, and I've already kind of built up that trust without being like super salesy, or you know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah. And it's I think most people understand that, but they don't have the patience for it. But it was just cool to see. Yeah. You've just been a pleasure to have in the community, and people have gotten a ton of value, including myself in e-commerce fuel, which I think we should dive into. So I gave an overview of Conversion Crimes at the top, but just for a little additional context, you guys focus on CRO and specifically on user testing, right? So you're gonna help store owners manage the process of running people through their store or their website to find out where the pain points are. Is that a fair kind of high level one sentence summary of what you guys do?
Yeah, so basically we help people find out why people are not converting on their website, and having people literally tell them exactly where and why. Because, you know, analytics and like A/B testing and stuff like this, they can tell you kind of where a problem is, or you can test a hypothesis of like what's better or worse. But at the end of the day, you don't know why a person is doing that. And so by having someone go to the website and like try to attempt the thing, you find out exactly why.
Yeah. And so we're going to use as a little mini case study, you know, we hired you guys to help us with the e-commerce fuel website. We redesigned it about 9 months ago with kind of more of a holistic approach, like instead of just being about the community, being more about like some of the content and the podcast and the community and the e-commerce fuel capital side and all this stuff. And realized that the number of applications that we had, we just saw it just drop off in terms of the people that were actually getting through to apply to the community, among other things. And so we thought, something is wrong here. We'd love to figure out what's going on. So we hired you. So I'd love, can you walk us through kind of what, maybe you could start just like through the early phases. What did you do from the outset when we said, you know, hey, Quinn, we'd love to have you guys help us. What was the first thing you guys did?
Yeah. So the first thing we did is really we audited the website, kind of trying to figure out like, okay, if people are coming here and they're not converting as well, which actually I've heard this so many times from like store owners and website owners and stuff like that, that they hire someone to come in and redesign stuff and their conversions drop. Sometimes the conversion dropping is actually a good thing. Like you're getting higher quality leads. You may be getting less leads, but you're getting higher quality leads, and it's less stress on the sales team and stuff. A lot of times it's a bad thing. Yeah, the first thing we did was we go through and we survey the customers. We look at the analytics. We do usability testing, and we kind of look at the overall picture and try to understand where people are falling off.
So when you say usability testing, what do you use a platform like usertesting.com? What do you use to do? Do you say, hey, we want you to land on this website. Imagine you're, you know, such and such. Here's your goal, and you just watch them walk through that? Or how do you set that up?
Yeah, so we built Conversion Crimes to be a usability testing platform. So usertesting.com, they've all gone enterprise. and focused on these really big corporations and stuff. And we found that user testing, usability testing is a great tool for small businesses, but the competitors really focus on enterprise. So we, that's why we built Conversion Crimes. And it's basically having somebody go to your website, record their screen while speaking their thoughts out loud. So let's say you have a, you know, your audience has e-commerce stores. So what do you think the store is about? You want to find a birthday gift for your best friend. So you want to find a blue shirt, that's their favorite color, under $50 with 2-day shipping because you got to have it by Saturday. And then you watch this person like try to like do that thing and you find out like, oh, well, they can't filter by color or they can't, the navigation is confusing or they added it to cart and now they're surprised by the shipping. They can't find the return policy. They want to know if it's like organic material, like whatever. You're kind of finding like the questions they're asking. Can they find the answers to those questions? Where are they looking for that? And it just gives you a lot of really good intel without having to have any tech knowledge or go through like click recordings or Hotjar or analytics or anything like that. It's literally just having watching people use your website or try to buy something on your store.
So when you're doing testing, how crucial is it to have the exact customer or the exact type of customer that's doing your testing? Like obviously in an ideal world, you'd want someone who's, if you're selling, you know, ballerina shoes to people in their 20s, then you'd want someone of that exact profile because it's going to be the most relevant. But how, sometimes it's hard to get those people. So how important is it to have the exact right person in your demographic versus having someone who's just somewhat knowledgeable about the interface and the space?
Yeah, it's important to get somebody that has domain knowledge, some kind of general niche knowledge of the store, but it's not important to get someone that's an exact target customer for your store in order to get valuable feedback. So a lot of the competitors, like usertesting.com, they've got like millions of people in their panel and you can find an exact target match, but that person might not be good about articulating feedback. We actually found that some of the quality of tests were bad. So at Conversion Crimes, we really try to find someone that's going to have domain knowledge and they're also professional and articulate and are able to give like really good feedback. Because in order to get feedback on usability testing, it needs to be usable. You don't need, it's not market research. I mean, you are getting some marketing value out of it, but it's not marketing research. You're trying to find out if someone understands your website, can they find things on your website? Or are they able to achieve the goal on the website? And are they able to purchase without friction? And if there's friction in that, it doesn't matter if, you know, they have their perfect match or not, that's going to be friction for anyone. And that's valuable knowledge.
So how many user tests should somebody do to be able to get a sense? Like if you do 10 of them, is that obviously, you know, traffic is less relevant here because you're just testing for testing. What's a good number to go through that you actually get real data, but you don't have to spend, you know, the like 6 months running people through these tests?
Yeah. So with user testing, you just need 5 people per test. So 5 people is enough to get 85% of usability issues in a flow. So it's better to do more tests more often than like one test with a bunch of people. Because what happens is after like 5 people, they start repeating the same errors. And so you're basically just watching different people make the same mistakes. So it's just a better use of time to just run it through with 5 people. 5 people is enough. Like if 3 people have a problem, you can assume that's widespread. If only 1 out of the 5 people has a problem, you can assume that, maybe that's an anomaly, that person's special, like I should deprioritize that kind of feedback. But if 3 people are having a problem or 4, then you know there's a problem with the website there. And if you do like 10, 20 more testers to get more statistical significance, it's just going to be kind of a waste of time. It's better just to retest it. Yeah.
Okay. So a lot smaller threshold than I would have guessed. What do you do? So you've got the user testing and you can see those things pretty obviously. You have them come in, give them a goal, watch them go through it and learn where they have questions or problems. What you also did customer questions though too. You asked a bunch of ECF members all these different questions. What do you value about the website? Why are you here? What would you miss most, et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm guessing you want to ask open-ended questions to try to get as much open form feedback as possible. I think people listening probably understand that. question I have though is how do you incentivize customers to take these surveys? Because it's, I don't know about, I as a customer, the number of times if I see someone email me a survey in my inbox, I very rarely hop at that, even if there's an incentive, right? Because it's just, I don't know, who likes surveys? They're hard to get people to do it. And thank you to all the members who took ours, really appreciate it. But how do you generally do that? Because surveys aren't exactly, you know, it's hard to get people to take surveys, but there's the data is super important from those for this process.
Yeah, maybe you and I, maybe we don't like taking surveys and stuff, but there are people out there that love that and they're in your audience. And if you send it out, like I was looking at your stuff, you had like 70 something responses to your, to the survey. So that's like, that's huge. And what comes out of that survey is people are telling you the people that fill out the survey are your most engaged, your most loyal customers. They love you or they have something to say. They want to help you. And when you get this language, what we did with that survey was we used it to help you articulate stuff on your website better. These are the words that your customers are using. And by putting those from your most, you know, enthusiastic customers, by putting on your website, you're going to attract more of them. And there's, you don't really need to incentivize them. They're just going to do that because they love you. Now, if we're talking about people that are not buyers, those I incentivize. Like, hey, you didn't buy my product. Like, why? I'll give you $50 to tell me why. Like those we incentivize, but actual customers, we never do that.
Hey, Andrew here with a little aside. If you're listening, you're obviously interested in e-commerce. And so I want to make sure you know about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands at E-Commerce Fuel. And the secret sauce, like you might guess, is it's limited to people who own stores, who are in the trenches, practitioners doing this stuff. It's a very curated community, which has three big benefits. First, it means everyone inside can help get fast on-point answers to your most important questions. If you're trying to decide if SMS is a tool worth rolling out, if you just got suspended on Amazon, if you're trying to hire a director of e-commerce, these are all things that either people have experience with or have gone through in the forums. And if you post and ask questions, you'll get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes, as well as being able to tap into close to a decade of archived discussions. So you get a lot of insights, fast answers to pressing questions. You get to plug into an amazing network of over 1,100 experienced e-commerce entrepreneurs. So you can reach out to people if you're in e-commerce fuel. Our members are incredibly giving and generous. And so if you want to reach out to someone with expertise, oftentimes we'd be happy to share what they know. If you're, you know, traveling, hopefully when traveling is a common thing again, a lot of our members would hit in the city, you know, DC, Dallas, Sydney, Australia, you know, London, wherever it is, and be able to have someone on the ground you can connect with or maybe grab a beer with. It's an amazing network. And then finally, we've got a huge user-generated review library with over 10,000 reviews on agencies, software, e-commerce software that you can tap into to avoid costly hiring and software mistakes. Nothing is worse than spending 3 months with an agency to onboard only to find out that a bunch of people already tried them and they were horrible and they wasted a bunch of your money and your life. So those are the kind of things you can avoid tapping into the unbiased reviews and experiences of our members with our software directory. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, you should join us. ecommercefuel.com. You can learn more. You can apply for membership there. We also have a 5x ROI guarantee. If you own a 7- or 8-figure brand and your membership fees for our community don't pay for themselves at least 5 times over the course of the first year, we'll refund it completely as well as send you $1,000 just for the wasted time. So ecommercefuel.com, check it out. We'd love to have you apply and potentially join the community. All right, back to the discussion. So time to take off the gloves, get ruthless, pretend I'm just a cardboard box with no heart, feelings, or emotion, which isn't that far from the truth. And I'd love you to just kind of rip apart what the biggest problems you found on the ECF site that we had were. So can you kind of, after this whole process, what were maybe the top three things that you found that you recommended we should improve and do better on?
Yeah, so basically we found that the homepage was used more like a navigational tool rather than the place where you tell your audience what you do in a unique way. A lot of it revolved around the podcast and the community being one of your main focuses didn't really get the room it deserved on the homepage. Like you guys wanted to get more people in your community, but the podcast was like so overwhelming on that homepage. So they just thought you were like a podcast, They didn't know there was anything beyond that at first glance. The second thing was that the sales page for the community contained a lot of really great information and the copy was really effective, but it was really hard to read and skim. It was really condensed. It looked overwhelming and it caused users to overlook some really important information, which probably led to you guys getting non-qualified leads. The third thing, let's see, you were using a lot of really cool, fun copy, especially in the calls to action, which I love. But sometimes users just need clarity over cleverness. And so it's important to also, before and after users accomplish something like any action, like clicking a button, to set and manage their expectations a bit better to encourage them to keep moving on. So those were probably the three main things that we found.
Yeah. And it's so, you know, it's this whole idea about being too close to your business to understand things well. It's so true because when you came up with, especially on the homepage, we redesigned the whole website about like 9 months ago with this idea of having more of a holistic view of like, okay, e-commerce fuel it. We have content, kind of this idea of community content and capital are the three pillars of it, right? You've got the podcast and this, you know, the e-commerce trends report and community side, you have, or on the content side, you have ECF capital side, you've got, and so we tried to make it more holistic, but in the process, I realized, didn't even realize until after this, the fact is that it's, you go to the homepage and you're right. And it's no, there's no clear, here's what we're about. We actually had a what do we do page that was off of the homepage. Like you had to click on a button to go to the what do we do, what are we about page. And it was only after we went through this process that I was like, why is this not front and center on our website? Especially with getting people to the community, which is really our primary focus and what we spend the most time working on. The other thing is that I found fascinating. And again, like it's one thing to realize, it's shocking how the human brain works, or maybe it's just me and I need to kind of pick up the RPMs here on my side, but we do something a certain way and then we're surprised when other people also do the same thing. Case in point being, you talked about the sales page for the community being really hard to read and skim. And there's bucket loads of text in there, right? Like tons of text. And even on the What We Do page, I was looking through it and it looks like some kind of research report with all the text. And when I go to a website, they get 15 seconds maybe. And even if I'm really interested, maybe a minute, but I'm not reading, you know, I don't read lots of text and going through the amount of, it was just not skimmable at all. And so I think probably the two biggest changes we're making in the redesign, which is in process, is one, have the main thing be on your homepage and sell it really, not sell it well, just talk about it really well. And then the second thing is use way less text. Be short, concise, headlines, bullets. If people want to really go find out about something, give them a link to another page for your top benefits that can dive into more, but let people quickly be able to scan what it is that you're doing. So the other thing too was, you mentioned, probably wasn't one of the top three, but there's a lot of people that would go through the process. They'd say, oh, this looks like a cool community. We're interested. They'd go through the process and apply. And then they would hit a payment page at the end and they'd be like, wait, what? This is like community?
That was the biggest thing that actually came out of the user testing. That was one of the big insights that came out of that, was that people would be like, wait, there's a charge? I'm surprised by that. You never want to surprise visitors with a payment charge like that.
Yeah. And so anyway, we're redesigning it so it's more obvious up front. So it's part of the payment, you know, kind of the application process. Cause anyway, so a lot of stuff like that. So we got these great recommendations. We're going through and working on getting those changed. How do you had mentioned before we started recording that people get overwhelmed a lot of times because you gave us this great report and gave us a lot of great suggestions. But then, you know, a lot of times people just, they don't necessarily want to redo their entire site. So how do people usually react when you hand all these off to them? Like, because it's one thing to know, hey, this is a problem. It's another thing to think, okay, I need to write brand new copy. I need to find a designer if I don't have one to mock something up. I need to get it designed, approve it. Like it's a lengthy process. So how do you recommend that people who maybe aren't willing to embark on an entire site redesign kind of start implementing this? Do people just get overwhelmed a lot of times when you hand this off to them?
Yeah, so that was one of our big problems at the agency Zeta Labs before, is that small businesses would come by these audits from us and we would do all this work. And then people kind of fell into two camps. One, they're like, super excited, I'm going to go fix all these things, I can't sleep until it's done. And then there's the other side, which is like, oh my God, I'm super overwhelmed. Like, how am I going to do all these things? And so that was one of the really big motivations for us to really move into conversion crimes, because there are a lot of small businesses out there that want to improve their conversions and improve their website, improve the customer experience for their customers. But it's just, it's resource intensive, time, money, all of these things. So with our expert insights on our usability testing, we're asking people, this is actually a change we're working on, is in our onboarding form, asking people what their development capabilities are. Like, do you have a developer on staff? Are you making these changes yourself? Do you use like Hey Carson, which is like tiny dev tasks, like something like that? And then tailoring the reports to meet them where they are. So that here's like 5 tiny tweaks that you could make this month really easily if they're doing it themselves, or we can prepare that stuff for their developer in whatever way they need it to make it more seamless and flow easier. Because I think there's a ton of ways you can increase conversions for small businesses and stuff, but there's not a way to do that that's simple and easy and fast for people to do.
No, it's super. It's a lot there, because like I alluded to earlier, you've got new copy you have to write. You've got development work that you need to do. You have design work, and rarely you're going to find. So that's 3, and that's outside of your agency. And so how, you know, when we were going through this, I took a lot of the lead on writing the copy. Patrick is doing a lot of the development work. But from a design perspective, I found that really challenging too, to find someone who's a good designer and has a, you know, kind of has a portfolio of stuff that has a feel that you like and enjoy. I went over to Dribbble. That's Dribbble with 3 B's. It's kind of like the marketplace for designers, and looked through a lot of portfolios searching for keywords like community and network and connections and e-commerce to see if I could find someone whose aesthetic and kind of style I liked that was also a good fit. And it took, you know, it took a long time, and even still, it was, you know, it wasn't like I found anyone with home runs. It was just, okay, hopefully these guys will work well. Do you have any recommendations for people, especially on the design element? Because it's, I feel like design is one of the harder things to find for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it is hard, because on Dribbble, especially, they design based on what's trendy, pretty, and gets likes and goes viral on the platform, and not what's actually functional and usable for the end user. There's a lot of really non-functional design on Dribbble. So like, there are things that'll be like really well liked, and you can think like, oh, this must be a great designer. But if you actually implemented that, your conversions would probably go down. Like, sure, it looks great, but yeah, not very useful. So yeah, it's really hard if you don't have the eye for design to find a really good designer. So with Dribbble, they are pre-vetted. Like, you can only, it's an invite-only platform. So the quality there is definitely really high. So you've already got someone that, okay, this person knows how to design. But then you have to filter through their process. Can they think like a designer? Right? And that's what you got to look for. So if you use Dribbble to kind of find someone whose style you like, then you need to interview them for their process. Like, are they able to tell you exactly why they did something on that design? Why did they make that decision? Why did they make that button that color? Why did they put that text there? Like, and if they can tell you a reason why, it means that they thought about it. There's a reason for it there.
What are 3 things, kind of, we start wrapping up here? E-commerce store owners listening, you know, 7-figure store owners. And there's, if they, let's say they were going to try to do a conversion light process and they really wanted to focus, or maybe even super light, and they just wanted to go through and look at potential friction points, get 2 or 3, you know, that they get mom or dad or whoever it is, or maybe even their teenage kids to come in, try to go through the website and do things. What are the 3 biggest bottlenecks or conversion killers or problems that people have on a site if they just wanted to run people and have them ask some friends to look at 3 things on their site right now to see how well they're looking? What are the 3 areas to focus on for store owners?
For store owners, I would say, in general, the value proposition is probably one of the biggest conversion killers. People don't understand what the site is about or what they can do there. Stores are a little bit easier on that, but still sometimes it's confusing. Like, to find the genre and exact niche of what that store is about. So the other thing is shipping. People, a lot of times e-commerce store owners, they're not transparent about their shipping. So when customers get to the checkout process, they're surprised by that. And nobody wants to pay like a $15 shipping on a, you know, $20 item. So shipping is kind of a big one. Let's see. The main thing is...
Sorry to interrupt, but for shipping, have you found it best that you put it just to have a really good shipping calculator on the cart page? Is that good enough? Or have you seen big conversion boosts from actually putting it, ideally probably just putting it, that shipping threshold right on the product page for people, I would guess is probably even better.
Yeah, having that information just front and center on the product page, on the homepage, on the checkout page, just being really upfront and transparent about it. Like you really don't want to, when it comes to money and stuff, you don't want to surprise visitors with any like charges, shipping, anything. You want them to know that upfront. Because when you surprise them, then they're like, they question you. They lose trust.
Great. So what's the third one? Value prop on the homepage, shipping, and what's the third one?
So product description and photos. So when you go to a store, like let's say you're going to Target or whatever, and you are looking at a product to buy, you can hold it, you can feel it, you can interact with it, you can move it around, you can look at the things on the box, and you can interact with it in this way. When you're shopping online, you can't do that. So the biggest boost to conversions that I've seen is by being able to replicate that experience in your store. So this means better photography, really good descriptions, answering questions people have, this sort of stuff, just kind of replicating that interactive experience on the site, whatever way you can do that in.
Yeah. And it's funny, kind of circling back to that value proposition on the homepage, it's so funny how some stuff, even if you know mentally, you may not be doing either from a bandwidth issue or, you know, something, you shifted something and you didn't think about it, case in point. The homepage right now, if I go to the e-commerce fuel homepage right now, after we redesigned it to kind of be more all-encompassing and an umbrella for all these different things, right now it says supercharge your store. And this is ... by leveraging our community of store owners, growth-minded podcasts, and savvy mentors and investors. And at the time when I wrote it, I was like, yeah, of course, this makes sense. We do all these things. And Annie, my wife, was reading it like totally. I wasn't even talking to her about the redesign. For some reason, she was on the website like 3 weeks ago. And she's on her phone and she looks at me and she says, man, your headline is super confusing. Like you really should work on that. I was like, I know. You and Quinn both are getting after me. I know. So anyway, point being, I mean, I've given presentations on this before at UCF Live, like that your headline above the fold should be what you do, who you do it for, and like that's the formula.
It's super hard, man, to do it on your own stuff. I struggle with it as well in conversion currents. I can tell you in the last, like, I don't know, 2 months, I've probably changed the headline like 12 times on conversion currents.
Yeah, it's hard, but it's, anyway, point being, even if you mentally know it, check out your homepage, see how it looks. It there's a good chance it could use improvement because, yeah, I think I, yeah.
Yeah, so you anyway. Can even ask a couple friends and stuff like, hey, like people that have never been your site, like don't know what it's about. Just ask them what they think it is because like what I think one of the things that came up in the usability testing on your value prop is people like supercharge. What does that mean? That's super fake.
Nitro racing with like e-commerce nitro racing parts. Oh, wait, no, what? Community for store owners? What's horrible marketing? So very cool. Thank you for all this stuff. If people are listening and they're like, I would love to have, you know, Quinn and her team be able to help me with some of this user testing, set stuff up, be able to kind of a done for you, at least on the testing and kind of the surveying and being able to, you guys put together an amazing report for us in terms of, hey, here's all the takeaways, here's what people value, here's what people are confused about, here's what to fix. It was fantastic. It saved us a ton of time. So conversioncrimes.com, any other details about or things you want to add if people are thinking about working with you?
Yeah, feel free to reach out. You can reach out at quinn@conversioncrimes.com. Always happy to jump on a call and talk to people about conversion rate optimization and design and all that techie, nerdy stuff.
Love it. So before we wrap up, kind of per the tradition, you have for doing a quick lightning round.
Okay.
Great. What's the best headline you've ever seen on a page that you can remember?
Best headline? Well, I guess I can talk about the one that I recently purchased from. I was recently looking for an accounting software and I came across Bench. And so theirs is... So you run your business, we'll do your bookkeeping, get a professional bookkeeper at a price you can afford and powerful financial reporting with zero learning curve. So that totally hit all my needs. I wanted to focus on the business, not worry about bookkeeping, affordable pricing. And I really just didn't want it to take any of my time. And they hit all of that in like, you know, two sentences. So it made me want to read more and learn about their services. And eventually I became a customer.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's so odd how it's so hard to just be very clear about what you do. I don't know why it's so difficult, but
the more clear and simple something is, the longer it took to get there.
Yeah. What do they say, that simplicity is the ultimate form of sophistication, something like that? What's one of your fondest memories from your childhood? And we'll define childhood as, let's say, you know, 18, like high school or earlier.
Let's see, thinking back to my entrepreneurial roots, probably going door to door with my little red wagon selling lemonade and candy. I would go to the grocery store. They had this candy aisle where it was like 10-cent candy, like little miniature like lemon head boxes and stuff like that, Red Hots and all those yummy candies we ate when we were kids. And so I'd buy them for 10 cents and then make some lemonade and go door to door and sell all this stuff.
That's awesome.
So I guess that's where the whole thing started.
Nice. What was one of, you know, if you've had one, what was a major seminal moment or turning period in your life? Either maybe where you started doing something differently or a moment that just really gave you a new perspective or a kind of new priorities in your life?
That would be, so I just graduated art school and I thought I wanted to be like this big creative director at some like hot agency thing like that. And so I went to tour an agency from a friend of a friend and he was just super blunt and honest with me. He was like, look, this is the desk you're going to be sleeping under. You're going to be the first one in, the last one out. See that guy over there? Yeah, that's going to be you. You're going to be everybody's coffee bitch for at least like 2 years. Hey, you have any hobbies? Yeah, forget about it. And he was just like, he just terrified me so much. And I had no idea like about the real world. This is like when I'm, you know, moving into adulthood and stuff. And I was like, if that's what a job is about, then like screw working for anyone. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm not doing that. And so then, you know, as part of like career services and stuff, they set me up with all these interviews and stuff, and I went to none of them, and it caused like this huge drama with the school. But I just started my own business out of that.
That's amazing. And so this wasn't a job you took. This was, you were like shadowing someone at an agency and they were just like, hey, here's how the real world works. Get ready for it.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happened. And I was really confused after that because at the time I didn't know like people could start businesses and stuff. But I'd won an award, some like student design contest I entered or something. And I went to this conference and this guy was like, yeah, I just graduated college and started my own business. And I was like, you can do that. That's what I'll do.
That's amazing. That's, oh man. Well, that guy kind of helped you out in a way.
Yeah, it changed my whole life.
Yeah. I think that's one thing about life that is unfortunate. I feel like so often, especially when you're young, like nobody shares the very candid trade-offs and hard parts about life or the disappointments that they've had. Like if every 80-year-old, you know, was required to write a candid anonymous book about their life and the decisions and what they were happy about and what they regretted, and it was anonymous so they didn't feel bad about anything, like what a valuable thing to pass on to people in their like teens and early 20s to make decisions about life, right? But like all the big stuff, unless you have someone who's an amazing mentor or parent who's super candidly honest with you, like you're shooting blind on a lot of things, you know?
Yeah, maybe that's where I get it from, because I'm super blunt and direct with a lot of people because it's helped me. That's how you grow. That's how you learn. And if nobody's like telling you this stuff, then it's a longer learning curve. Yeah, and you just can go down the wrong path.
Yeah. And then finally, last question, who's the most interesting person you've met as a part of ECF?
So I don't know if I'm going to butcher his name or not, but David Rauch, is that how you say it?
I think so, but I'm not 100% sure. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. So David Rauch, he reached out to me on private message on the e-commerce fuel forum when he saw that we got funded by Earnest Capital. And he was like, hey, if you want to talk shop, like hit me up. And I was like, yes, let's talk. And we had this super long, like, I don't know, like 2-hour conversation, just shooting the shit about all kinds of stuff. It was super interesting. And I wouldn't have met him otherwise. So that was super cool.
That's awesome. David, very cool. Appreciate it, man. Good guy. Well, Quinn, thank you. Thank you not only for, like I said, everything you've added to the community. You are our kind of official, well, not kind of, you are our official conversion rate optimization expert, which means, you know, you do a monthly and annual update on the state of CRO. You're available for members along with our other experts for you know, kind of getting tagged in discussions and weighing in on CRO issues. And you've just been a huge resource and amazing addition to the community. So thank you for that. And also for the fantastic work you did on ecommercefuel.com, fixing the botched headlines that I somehow thought were a great idea, or at least proposing that we do better. So yeah, if you're listening and you want some help, you'd love to be able to dive in quickly, get results, get like a very detailed analysis of what's wrong with your site, how to improve it, and get qualitative and quantitative data from not only your customers, but from prospects. conversioncrimes.com. Check them out. They do excellent work. I can vouch for them. And yeah, Quinn, thank you so much. It's awesome having you on and really appreciate having you in the community.
Thanks for having me. I've really enjoyed the community. Thank you so much.
That's going to do it for this week. A big thank you again to OneClick Upsell for making this show possible. Learn more about how to offer powerful upsells to your customers at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And if you're a store owner, an in-the-trenches store owner looking for your tribe, you really need to join us inside the eCommerce Fuel private community. It's the world's largest, most active community of 7- and 8-figure e-commerce store owners with a thriving discussion forum, software and agency reviews, live events, and much more. You can learn more about our community and apply at eCommerceFuel.com. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard and adventure often. And I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
The ASY Radio Network, live from New York.